Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
A 12-year-old boy climbed out a window with open wounds on his body and duct tape around his wrists. He walked to a neighbor's house and asked for food and water. That's how Ruby Frankie got caught. An 8-year-old boy in Croatia looked at a 13-year-old he just met and said, "Google my name." The kid knew. He knew he was listed as an endangered missing child. He knew that if someone searched for him, they'd find out his mother had allegedly taken him illegally. He used a stranger's curiosity to trigger his own rescue. That's how Elisha Seymour got caught. Two Utah mothers, two sets of children in both cases. The kids figured out how to save themselves. So where were the fathers? Well, it's a complicated story. One which nobody wants blame or responsibility because, you know, they're all in their certain places for specific reasons. Certain places where odd, extreme behavior, unhealthy, delusional behavior is masquerading as something called religion. And everybody's supposed to respect that and love that, and it's okay. Until it gets dangerous, then it's, oh my God. Kevin Frankie was miles away, living separately from his family, working on himself. He hadn't seen or spoken to those children in over a year. When police told him what had happened, the starvation, the restraints, the wounds dressed with cayenne pepper, he was visibly upset, but listen to how he described his role in that family. "I've chosen to trust my wife with the children. My job is to financially provide for them. I pay the bills. With my job, I provide the money. It goes into a shared bank account. That's my only involvement." Is it? "The space has been exactly what I needed to face my own addictions. I know nothing that's going on in their lives." He's describing the timeline of his children's torture like it's a business arrangement, like fatherhood is a division of labor, and he drew the paycheck column. This isn't a man who was deceived by a master manipulator. This is a man who checked out. He outsourced parenting entirely and called it trust, in my opinion. His lawyer later said Kevin never actually had the porn addiction Jody Hildebrandt convinced him he had. Hildebrandt, the therapist, the business partner, the woman who would plead guilty alongside Ruby, who was recommended by the Mormon Church as just a fine and dandy couples therapist, told Kevin he was heartbroken, told him he needed to separate from his family, told him the distance was good for him, a necessary thing for his healing. And Kevin believed her. He moved out. He took his oldest son with him. He left his 5 children behind with 2 women who would torture them. In the name of religion, law enforcement visited that house 15 times between 2019 and 2023. Child Protective Services came knocking repeatedly. Kevin later admitted that Hildebrandt coached him not to answer. "They want to rip your family apart," she allegedly told him. "They want to destroy your family. This is what government does." And Kevin, father of 6, provider of paychecks, listened to her. He didn't answer the phone. He didn't answer the door. For over a year, the state tried to check on his children, and he treated it like harassment. He was cleared as a suspect because he genuinely wasn't there. He genuinely didn't know. "But I wasn't there" isn't just his defense. It's the indictment. Kendall Seymour is a different situation, and I want to be clear about that. Kenny was divorced in 2021. He was following a custody arrangement. He dropped his kids off at school before Thanksgiving, expecting to see them in 10 days. His ex-wife allegedly forged his signature on passport applications. She allegedly took the children to Europe without telling him, without permission, in violation of said custody agreement. When Kendall found out his kids were in a Croatian orphanage, he got on a plane. He's there right now, fighting bureaucratic nightmares to bring them home. He didn't abandon anyone. He was deceived. But listen to how he talks about it. When asked about the international abduction of his children, he called it issue number 10 in their divorce, like it's a line item, like it's paperwork. When asked if he thought his ex-wife intended to hurt the children, quote, her motive always seemed to be to protect the kids, even if it was to get them away from a fake danger, an imagined threat. His ex-wife allegedly believed COVID vaccines would turn people into zombies. She allegedly believed Salt Lake City was going to be destroyed. She posted TikTok videos telling people God was warning her about the nuclear winter and the EMP attacks. And Kenny's giving her credit for good intentions, not calling out the crazy. That's a problem. Well, she's good otherwise. You know, she thinks Salt Lake City is going to go into nuclear winter and there's EMP attacks and the kids got microchips from COVID vaccines and the world's about to end and she's going to do anything she can to protect them. I don't know. That might be a red fucking flag, Kenny. But when you're brought up around this way of thinking your whole life, it's just another Tuesday. When asked about the religious roots of her beliefs, said they seem to just be saying that God is speaking to them and they speak in general Christian terms, but I haven't noticed any rout of any noticeable sect of Christianity. The last one is the tell. Kendall Seymour grew up in LDS. Big shock. His ex-wife grew up LDS. Big shock. She's posting videos about God telling her to flee before destruction comes, about Salt Lake being the new Babylon, about preparing for the end times, and Kenny, raised in the same tradition, can't identify the religious roots, because when doomsday is your baseline, you don't recognize doomsday. Here's a question that keeps nagging at me. Two Utah fathers, same church, same state, both married women who developed apocalyptic disorders, beliefs that escalated to the point of devastating their families. Both claim total shock. Both say they didn't see it coming. What are the odds? Either these are the two most oblivious men in Utah, or there's something in the theological water that makes dangerous thinking look a whole lot like devotion. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is named for apocalyptic belief. That's not an insult. That's literally what the name means. Latter-day Saints. We're living in the last days before Christ's return in their theology. This is fundamental, foundational theology, not fringe interpretation. It's in their title. Members are taught from childhood to anticipate war, sickness, persecution, and the eventual collapse of governments before Jesus comes back to rule the temple in Missouri. Yeah. The church's official website recommends storing 3 months of food as a baseline, with guidance on building towards a full year's supply of wheat, rice, beans, and other staples that can last 30 years. And they do. And they live amongst us. During the Cold War, church leadership urged members to stockpile 2 years' worth of supplies in preparation for nuclear conflict. Now the church has softened that over time. Modern guidance frames food storage as preparation for job loss or medical emergencies, not the literal end of the world, but the underlying theology hasn't really changed, and it's still pretty much how it operates. And here's what gets interesting. BYU scholar Christopher Blythe traced the history of LDS apocalypticism for his book on the subject. What he found is that the beliefs the church wanted to assimilate into mainstream America, they just moved underground. In the 19th century, when the church was at war with the federal government, apocalyptic versions were what Blythe calls a group project. Ordinary members shared dreams and prophecies openly, and leadership encouraged it. But once Utah got statehood and the church wanted respectability, that kind of talk became embarrassing. If you stood up in Sunday meetings and started prophesying about destruction and tribulation, people would raise their eyebrows. So where did it go? Into families, into private gatherings, into small publications and personal networks, and eventually, inevitably, into digital communities, TikTok, YouTube, podcasts with names like Preparing a People, which is where Lori Vallow-Daybell was a feature guest before she was convicted of murdering her children. The pipeline runs straight from institutional theology to living room conversations to algorithm-fed radicalization. And at every stop along the way, it looks like faith. This is the psychological core of what happened to these families. When you grow up in a culture where storing a year of wheat in beans is considered prudent, not paranoid, where you're taught the Constitution will hang by a thread before Christ returns, where preparing for tribulation is tied to your eternal worthiness, the personal revelation is not just possible, but expected. Where God speaks to ordinary people and gives them warnings and promptings and dreams, when that's your baseline, when your wife starts talking about Salt Lake being destroyed, about nuclear winter, about EMP attacks, about God telling her to prepare, how different does that sound from Sunday dinner with your grandparents? How different does that sound from testimony meeting? How different does that sound from the lessons you learned in primary as a kid? The answer is maybe not that different. Not different enough to trigger alarm. Not different enough to make you ask hard questions. Not different enough to make you wonder if your children are safe. The blind spot isn't that these men are stupid. It's that they're miscalibrated. They were raised on a scale where apocalyptic preparation is at the low end of devout. Everybody has food storage. Everybody knows we're in the last days. Everybody's had a spiritual prompting or knows someone who's had a dream about what's coming. That's normal. That's faithful. That's baseline. So when someone starts sliding towards the high end of that scale, towards active prophecy, towards personal revelation, towards taking action based on what they believe God is telling them, it doesn't necessarily register as dangerous. It registers as enthusiastic. Committed, maybe a little intense, but not crazy, not harmful, just really, really faithful. Until a kid climbs out a window covered in wounds, until four children end up in an orphanage 6,000 miles from home. Then it's a problem. But what got them there, the church is like, not us. Let me be clear about the difference between these two fathers, because it matters. Kevin Franke doesn't get a pass. He didn't see his kids for over a year, not a phone call, not a visit, not a birthday. He was told to stay away by the same woman who was starving and binding his children, and he complied. He was told not to answer when Child Protective Services knocked, and he didn't answer. He described his role in the family as paying bills and nothing else. He admitted in the police interview that he knew nothing about his children's lives, and his defense, then and now, is that he trusted his wife. All of that allegedly. And at what point here does trust become simple neglect and willful ignorance? At what point does I didn't know become I didn't bother to find out? Kevin Franke had every opportunity to stay involved in his children's lives, and he chose not to. He chose to believe a therapist who told him he was a porn addict when he wasn't. He chose to believe his wife when she said the kids were fine. He chose not to answer the door when the state came to check. Those are choices, and his children paid for them. Kendall Seymour is a little different. He was following a custody arrangement. He was actively co-parenting. His ex-wife allegedly forged documents to deceive him. The moment he learned where his children were, he flew across the world to get them. He's spending his savings on Croatian lawyers and translators and extended stays, fighting to bring his children home. He didn't check out. He was lied to. But even Kendall, the sympathetic one, the one who's doing everything now, can't see the religious roots of what happened. Even he describes his ex-wife's apocalyptic delusions in detached clinical terms. Even he seems genuinely confused that beliefs about God's warning and the end times could come from through the tradition they were both raised in. Quote, I haven't noticed any route to any noticeable sect of Christianity. Kenny, it's your sect. It's the one you grew up in. The beliefs your ex-wife allegedly used to justify taking your children to Europe are intensified versions of belief you heard your whole life. She didn't invent apocalyptic Christianity. She radicalized within a tradition that already pointed that direction. And here's the question nobody wants to ask the institution. If your theology teaches members to expect the end of the world, to prepare for tribulation, to receive personal revelations from God about what's coming and what to do about it, what guardrails exist to help people recognize when faithful becomes dangerous? Because what resources do you offer families who see a loved one sliding toward extremism wrapped in religious language? Or are they just more religious than you? Are they getting more messages? Is that what you tell yourself? What responsibility do you bear for creating the soil where this grows? None at all, right? Until they go off the deep end, then you're just not part of it. The LDS church didn't tell Ruby Frankie to torture her kids. The church didn't tell Elisha Seymour to flee to Croatia. BYU scholars have noted that the specific possession framework Ruby used to justify abuse falls outside mainstream church teachings. These are extreme cases, and the institution can credibly say it doesn't endorse what these women did. But the institution built a culture where apocalyptic thinking is normalized, where personal revelation is encouraged, where dreams and visions about the end times circulate in families and friend groups, where digital communities, where prepping for destruction is a sign of faithfulness. And when someone takes that further than expected, they're really good at it, into abuse, into abduction, into delusion. The people closest to them often don't see it, can't see it, because it looks too much like what they've already believed. That's not an accusation. That's a question. Are you doing anything about this? Because it keeps happening. Lori Vallow, Dave Val, Ruby Frankie, now Elisha Seymour, all raised LDS, all developed apocalyptic beliefs that escalated to the point of harming children, all surrounded by people who didn't see it coming. All surrounded by the letters LDS. At some point, we don't endorse this, isn't enough. At some point, you have to ask why your tradition keeps producing these cases and what you're going to do to prevent the next one. A 12-year-old boy knew to climb out a window and ask a stranger for help. He knew the adults in the house weren't going to save him. He knew they were crazy, a 12-year-old. He knew he had to save himself, and he did. An 8-year-old boy knew to tell a teenager he just met to Google his name. He understood at 8 years old that the situation was wrong, that people were looking for him, that the internet could connect him to rescue. He used a stranger's phone to save himself and his siblings. The children recognized danger. The children found a way out. Their fathers were trusting, providing, working on themselves, giving space, not being an actual father. Following arrangements, not raising the red flag when things are radically unsafe and insane. Respecting beliefs. And while they were doing all that, their kids were figuring out how to escape. Kevin Frankie now advocates for child influencer laws. I can think of something better. How about you go after the fucking church? How about you start explaining that shit? How about you start advocating for survivors of the LDS fucking religion? Huh? Oh, are you still part of it? Yeah, you don't want to back away from that, because that hasn't done you wrong or anything. It's not the religion. It's like, yeah, no, it is. And then they abandon you the second that they realize they've baked you too long. He says he regrets putting his children on YouTube, but he still describes what happened in terms of manipulation, brainwashing, being deceived by Jody Hildebrand, anything that doesn't entail LDS. He doesn't touch the theology. He doesn't examine the culture that made it possible for him to not notice his children were being tortured for months. Kendall Seymour told an interviewer that if the public can do anything, it's to watch out for friends who are expressing thoughts. If someone's willing to say something to you, he said, that's a lot more in their head than they're not telling you. Oh, yes. You think? That's good advice. But it raises a harder question. What do you do when your thoughts your loved one is expressing sound a lot like thoughts you heard growing up? What do you do when God told me Salt Lake is going to be destroyed doesn't sound that different from what you learned at church? And it's not a red flag that your ex might be up to something a bit extreme soon. These aren't evil men. I don't think they're even bad people. They're products of a religious cult, or culture, as we call it. So steeped in apocalyptic expectation that dangerous beliefs could hide in plain sight. They were raised in a tradition that normalized exactly the kind of thinking their ex-wives took to extremes. And when the extremism produced catastrophe after catastrophe, these men were genuinely shocked. That shock is the story, not the individual zealots posting TikTok videos about zombies. Not the therapists running manipulation schemes disguised as counseling. It's the culture that makes dangerous thinking look so much like devotion that fathers can't see it, while children as young as 8 understand exactly what's happening and figure out how to escape. When your kids are more clear-eyed about danger than you are, that's not faith. That's failure. And at some point, I didn't know stops being the defense and starts being the whole damn problem. Your thoughts in the comments section on YouTube. I'd love to get your thoughts. You can also weigh in on our Substack, hiddenkillers.substack.com, to give me your insight, your thoughts. We can keep pretending nothing's happening here and respect. Respect someone's religious beliefs, even though it keeps producing the same fucking insane results. There's plenty of people who've escaped the LDS Church who now consider themselves survivors. There's a reason for that, and they should not be ignored. Well, the ones I've run into are lovely and nice. Yeah, I've met plenty lovely, nice ones, too, and I'm sure there's plenty lovely, nice ones out there. If you're part of an organization, a group that keeps producing this sort of shit, and you're like, well, it doesn't affect me, I'm doing good. You're not being honest. You're not being fair to the people that are being affected in a very different way than you are by that same group. There's a problem here. And it's going to keep getting worse until the LDS Church looks at itself and goes, yeah, maybe it is us. Rather than, no, not us at all, in my opinion. Your thoughts in the comments section on YouTube. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games that's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to chumbacasino.com.
Chumbacasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit chumbacasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply. Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at chumbacasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Chumba. Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Plus, terms and conditions apply.
Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play, only at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.